It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. Matt Nair on air.
This shouldn't be a thing.
Michigan man leads lawnmower chase. I'll stop, says the suspect. Instead, he reaches under the seat and pulls out a gun.
Shoots himself in the hand.
The deputy has his taser trained on him, and yes, he tased him.
I'm not advocating him for crime, but boost something that goes faster than cop on foot.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on Earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at wiss.fm.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The lawsuit over Act 10 will almost certainly end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, intensifying the race for a seat on the bench in the spring. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The judge ruled Act 10 is unconstitutional because it treats different groups of public employees unequally. The controversial 13-year-old law strictly limits public sector bargaining rights in Wisconsin. Michael Childers is a labor education professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says the law also brought the state back more than 50 years, as Wisconsin was a pioneer in the fight for workers' legal rights.
It was the first state in the nation that allowed formally for public sector bargaining and then became the first to basically greatly curtail bargaining rights for all but police and fire in the state.
Act 10 would be struck down pending a final decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which currently has a liberal majority. The Republican-controlled legislature that appealed the recent decision is hoping to drag out the case. But the public workers who challenged the law hope the court rules before a new justice is seated next year. Wisconsin's public sector laws of 1959 and 1962 are regarded as turning points in the legal rights of workers. Childer says Wisconsin's union participation was always higher than the national average until the passage of Act 10 in 2011.
They had rights similar to what most workers in the private sector in the United States enjoyed, which is the ability to bargain over hours, wages, and all other conditions of work.
Childers says Wisconsin experienced the largest decline of union membership in the U.S. over the past decade. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, chance of rain and snow and highs in the mid-30s, a bit breezy out of the southeast. Tonight, rain mixed with snow and temps around 34. For Sunday, cloudy and 42. Clouds and 42 again for Monday with a slight chance of rain, 33 on Tuesday.
Currently 26 degrees.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, everybody? Oh, my goodness. What a day it is today. You got Mark Becker, you got the Rational Revolution, you are in the right place. Hope all is well with you. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. If you didn't, well, whatever. If you want to listen to it again, Civic Media app, you can look at all of our episodes that we've had. It was Chris Alfheim, state senator-elect, my goodness, and former host of this show. So, you know. We got some big shoes to fill here. But hey, we also have a powerful powerhouse guest today. This dude is the mastermind behind the award-winning political opinion column, the Recombobulation Area, and Civic Media's very own political director, by the way, the one and only Mr. Dan Schaefer. What's up, dude?
Hey, Mark. Good to be with you. Happy to join you here on the Rational Revolution. How's everything going?
It's great, man. It's been a minute. Life is good. How about you?
It's been good. It's been, you know, it's been a discombobulating few weeks, yeah. It's happy to be here to recombobulate with you.
Yeah, and I'm happy and honored that you're here as well. I have to say one thing before we kind of get going. Before I knew who you were, I followed your work as tens of thousands of people do, or more than that. But one of the things that's cool is, you know, as you become a parent, having validators and just little things to know that you're doing the right thing and in the right place, because it's freaking hard, you know? And one of the things that I could set my clock on Sunday morning is coffee, local news, and a tweet from Dan Schaefer saying, "Good morning, fellow parents."
That's right. And that's right. It's been one of my hallmarks of my Twitter presence is greeting all of the other people who are up that early on a weekend morning, because no one else is going to be up at 6 a.m. on a weekend morning.
No.
Other than other parents. So
correct.
It's you know, we're all in this together.
Yes.
Right?
And so that was always really neat to kind of, okay, all right. You know, you're never alone. And so I think that's such a cool little hit that you did. And it, you know, I think it impacts more people than what you might think.
Well, that's cool to hear. I've had a lot of people tell me that they really enjoy that particular running tweet that I have. I still call it a tweet, but
yeah, absolutely.
Just every Saturday or Sunday morning, which, you know, my wife and I trade off which day we have on the weekends to get up with our daughters. And so it can sometimes be on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday, but I always like to greet all the other parents who are up at ungodly hours with our kids. Uh-huh. watching Bluey. On a early weekend morning, maybe trying to get a couple extra winks while they're watching those Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, so that's cool stuff, man. So this is the first time we've spoken in a few months, and this is the first time we've spoken since the November election. So, like, what the hell happened?
Well, Donald Trump won again.
You know, golly.
Yeah, Donald Trump won again. And in Wisconsin, it was one of the close, the closest of any of the seven swing states. So, you know, I think that is an interesting part of what happened and was, you know, kind of the top item in my 10 takeaways column that I wrote the week of the election was that, you know, Wisconsin nearly defied the red wave that was this year's election and, you know, voted to the left of Michigan and Pennsylvania for the first time since 1988, which I think is pretty significant.
Yep.
And then we also, you know, Kamala Harris won more votes in Wisconsin in 2024 than Joe Biden got in 2020. It's just the problem was that Donald Trump was able to reach more people, turn out more voters, and, you know, flip enough of them to give him a narrow margin in the state of Wisconsin. And then, of course, across the country in all seven of the swing states. You know, I think everybody going into the election was saying, yeah, it's a coin flip. It's a toss up. It could go either way. Well, when that coin flips, it's not always like seven different coins are getting flipped. It's kind of one coin flip that's going to, you know, be the direction that the country chooses. And that just so happened to be the direction that is going to send Donald Trump back to the White House for a second term.
Well, it's crazy. You know, in Wisconsin, Donald Trump won, but so did Tammy Baldwin.
Yeah.
You know, I think underscores how purple we really are, is that, you know, we talked about, even when I was on the other side, we talked about how Obama would win, but then Scott Walker would win, and there would be, right, you know, Trump Baldwin voters and Obama Ribble voters and all these, you know. So it's like, it's kind of crazy how all of that works. What is that?
I think it just goes to show that how evenly divided our state is. And, you know, 2 years ago it was Evers Johnson voters, right? Ugh. And now it's Trump Tammy voters. And I think, you know, it was really interesting to see they both won by 0.86%.
Yeah. So
Tammy Baldwin won by 0.86%. Donald Trump won in Wisconsin by 0.86%. It just goes to show how close things are in Wisconsin and why people compete so much, you know, for those swing voters that, you know, 30,000 one way, 20,000 the other is going to decide, you know, the fate of the state, the fate of the nation sometimes. And it's just, I think we just have, you know, it's now five of the last seven presidential elections in the state of Wisconsin decided by less than 1%.
Yeah.
The other two being the ones with Barack Obama on the ballot. Barack Obama, clearly the most successful presidential candidate in Wisconsin this century, but in every other election, it's been remarkably close. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon, because I think we have, you know, some colliding shifts across the state. I think you're seeing it in your neck of the woods in Green Bay and in and around the Fox Valley and all that. You have, you know, rural communities still moving to the right, still becoming redder and redder each election cycle, especially when Trump's on the ballot. And then you have a number of other, you know, kind of more mid-sized communities across the state and a lot of suburban communities still kind of moving to the left in a lot of ways. So you have, and I think, you know, you saw that in the feature story that I wrote on Green Bay and the Fox Valley before the election too, with some of those kind of colliding forces. And I think those are going to persist in a lot of ways, because I don't think, you know, I think this election showed that there's still room for Republicans to grow their margins in rural areas. And I think there's still areas for Democrats to increase their margins in some of the more, you know, college towns, suburban areas, some of these mid-sized communities in the state that I think tend to get overlooked, that, you know, are continuing over the long term shifting to the left.
Well, and what's interesting is, you know, I'd like to learn a little bit more about how Rebecca Cook was so successful on the western part of the state, and, mm-hmm, you know, how we weren't able to match that in the 8th congressional district. I think, you know, and I'd have to see, I don't know the makeup of the two, is one more red than the other, but I think they're pretty similar. And, you know, how can Democrats take that Rebecca Cook energy and kind of duplicate that throughout the state of Wisconsin? Because, you know, we talked about it with Chris Elfheim at the last episode, that we are a 50-50 state, but we have two out of eight of our congressional seats are held by Democrats. So that's not 50-50 at all. We're getting there, right, you know, in the state assembly, the Senate, but like, how do we work that?
Yeah, I think it's going to, you know, it's going to take some time. And just to get to the comparisons between the third congressional, yeah, district where Rebecca Cook came up, what was it, about 3%?
She was close. I know.
Yeah, it was like 2-3% behind Derek Van Orden. And then it was more of a double digit margin in the 8th congressional district. And I think that that is, it is a much redder district in the 8th. And I think that was, you know, Kristen Lierley, I think, ran a terrific race and was able to, you know, really engage a lot of people up and down the ticket in the district. And I think just having her, you know, kind of connecting a lot of the dots, encouraging a lot of people to run. They, you know, there were every state Senate and state assembly seat in the 8th congressional district had a Democrat running in it for the first time in a very long time. And I think, you know, Kristen Lierley's efforts were no small part of that. But I think that district, it, you know, the way that the districts are drawn, I feel like there should be a district that includes Green Bay and the Fox Valley.
I agree with
that. And right now the Fox Valley is split into two. So you have Oshkosh that's in the 6th congressional district represented by Glenn Grothman. And then you have the Appleton in the 8th congressional district represented by now by Tony Weed. So I think that is, that's certainly part of it, that you have the Fox Valley split. I think if you had, you know, Oshkosh and Appleton in one district, I think you'd have something a little bit more competitive. So I think that that's part of it too. I think, you know, Cook's performance was pretty impressive in the 3rd district.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see what she's going to do next. I think there was a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week indicating she might be lining herself up for another run. I think, you know, in 2 years, it might be, you know, if historical trends continue, you know, the party that's not in the White House tends to do better in the midterms. So perhaps it will be a more Democratic year in 2026 if she does decide to run again. So I think that's interesting. The one that I think Democrats need to pay a little bit more attention to and should be a little bit concerned with based on the results of this election is the 1st congressional district. That's one that looked like it was going to get more competitive. It was on the DCCC's list of, you know, kind of the red to blue targets. And even though they had some federal spending in that race, Peter Barca did worse in 2024 than Ann Rowe did in 2022. So I really do think that, you know, for one, I think it's a pretty impressive electoral performance from Congressman Brian Stile, one, and an underwhelming one from Democrat Peter Barca.
Do you think he was the right candidate, though?
District. You know, he had a lot of name recognition in that district, and I think it's been tough for Democrats to find the right candidate in that. But I also think, you know, you're looking at some of the trends in Kenosha County and some of these, you know, southernmost counties in the state of Wisconsin that have been shifting more Republican in the last few election cycles. So I think that that should be, you know, I think that's a little bit of a cause for concern among Democrats when you're looking both at the statewide formula and at that that part of the state. I think Stile has been, you know, he's certainly not somebody I'm going to agree with on a whole lot of things, but I have to have some respect for what he's been able to do from an electoral standpoint. You know, he won by, again, winning by a larger margin this year than 2 years ago, even though Democrats at the you know, we're bringing some dollars into that race is pretty impressive.
Do you think that we got like 30 seconds in before the break, but do you think that a lot of it is that Trump factor?
I do think, yeah, and we can get into that after the break.
I would love to.
I do wonder how much of this is Trump specific and how much of it is a, you know, just a larger realignment.
Yeah, because we were talking here with Dan Schaefer, and I want to talk about that. I want to talk about you know, what Wisconsin can learn from this election, be more like Baldwin. I want to talk about Ben Wickler, and I want to talk about what happens in 2 years with Tony Evers and all that. We're on the Rational Revolution. We'll be right back. Come.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
The Dom Salvia Show.
RVK, Professor Emeritus of Democracy. We're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge.
I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America, but I say take back Wisconsin.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Luke Matheris, you let the dogs out.
I let the dogs out. It was me. After about 15 minutes, I go out there and I'm like, what is this mound? An opossum playing dead in the middle of the yard. So I'm out there kind of hollering, like trying to corral the dogs. And then we finally got Aurora to come in the house, stepped away for a little bit, came back and was gone. But I really hope that it remembers this traumatic experience and never comes back in my yard again.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Welcome to the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, revolutionaries. You got Mark Becker on the Rational Revolution, and we are recombobulating here with Mr. Dan Schaefer, political editor-in-chief extraordinaire, author, all of those things. With the
all of those things, Mark.
Yeah, so we were talking about, on the other side, we were talking about the Trump factor. And my goodness, that's been a thing since 2016. And it's I don't know how we break from that.
Yeah, I think the, you know, he was able to really drive a lot of turnout. And much to my millennial liberal chagrin, now has the the record for most votes in a single presidential election in this election. And I want to break it down this way. This is kind of the way that I've been thinking about it in the wake of this election, is that I think there are kind of two kinds of Republicans. There are the country club Republicans that I think make up a lot of the, you know, the traditional Republicans of the party, the George W. Bush, the Mitt Romney, the Paul Ryan factor of the party. Yep. And then I think you have the Trump Republicans, which I'm going to characterize as the pro wrestling Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, if you were at the RNC like I was, you know, you had Hulk Hogan had the guy from the UFC, you had a Kid Rock concert, basically. You had all sorts of this stuff going on. But I think the pro wrestling Republicans have been, Trump has tapped into something with this group. And I think it is driving turnout in a way that is really scrambling the preconceived notions of how turnout necessarily works. So I think, you know, they really targeted what us political science dorks will refer to as the low propensity voters, people who don't necessarily vote in every election, might not have voted in the midterms when the gubernatorial race was on the ballot, might not vote in their local elections, but did vote when Trump was on the ballot and do vote when Trump was on the ballot. And I think for so long, there has been this thought among progressives and among people on the left, you know, saying that if only we delivered, you know, this kind of Bernie Sanders style left wing politics, then that would tap into this unseen reservoir of people who don't necessarily vote in every election. Where I think the reality is that we're seeing with Donald Trump is that that hidden reservoir is not Bernie Sanders progressives, but pro wrestling Republicans. And those pro wrestling Republicans who are coming out and voting for Donald Trump. And these are, you know, the numbers have detailed that there's a lot of people who don't necessarily pay that close attention to the news cycle, and people who might not, you know, and I don't want to blame people for that. People are living their lives. They have they're busy. They, you know, you might not have time to sit down and listen to the Rational Revolution. Of course, I would recommend otherwise.
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
But I think it is, you know, he has tapped into this group of people who are not necessarily that engaged in American politics from election to election. And a lot of them vote just for Trump. And I think you saw it, you know, in a lot of these swing states where, like Wisconsin, where you saw Trump winning the state, but the Democratic candidate for Senate winning. So you had Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, Ruben Gallego in Arizona. I'm blanking on the name of the now senator elect in Michigan. But I think you saw a lot of these races where, you know, it's not necessarily people who are voting Republican, but they're voting Trump.
But I think what's scary about that is that, like, you know, if, because I know you don't want to blame people. I have absolutely no problem doing that. So, you know, like, but it's when you have the people that are some of the low propensity voters, it's, and all they're doing is voting for Trump. It might not be the person that will sit down and watch CBS Sunday morning, but it would be the person that is going to be like, yeah, I'll drive halfway across the country and storm the Capitol, you know? So it's like, you know, I worry about these, the voters that are coming out. It's not necessarily like, they're not moderates on the right. It's some pretty extreme people.
Yeah, it is some definitely some far right aspects. And I think he is able to, you know, to bring people out of the woodwork that may otherwise be voting for some third parties or something like that, too. Some of those fringe, you know, kind of like America First, whatever parties that like got involved in, in the Senate race and whatever. And so I think that's part of it, too. But I think, you know, you wonder if this is going to be a durable coalition. Trump, because I think one of the aspects of Trump, and I think you said there was an interview in the Time magazine just named him person of the year, and they had that interview with him, and Trump in that interview, I was reading it this morning, you know, he didn't really express caring all that much about the anti-trans ads that his campaign ran so many of, and and that Republicans, you know, up and down the ticket were running so many of, and in that interview, he's just like, yeah, it's really not that many people. It's not that, you know, we're not that focused on the bathroom stuff or the sports stuff and whatever. Yeah. And I think that helps.
As Nancy Trump. Mace posts pictures of her outside the bathroom in the, you know, Capitol saying, I'm not going to back down. Shut up.
Well, and I think what makes Trump successful is that I don't think he, on a personal level, cares about these loony right-wing social issue obsessions that can be so animating to those voters. But then again, at the same time, you know, members of his administration, obviously members of the Republican Party, are going to be advancing these types of anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, anti-abortion type of social issue policies. But I don't think Trump himself really, you know, I think people can assign their own political views to this, and maybe people who like some of these pro wrestling Republicans that I've been talking about that might not really share the, you know, religious right conservative views on abortion, on LGBTQ rights, or whatever it might be, can just assign their own, you know, belief system to Trump because he is, you know, just constantly a moving target on some of these issues. And I think from, you know, the celebrity world that he came from, you know, is going to look more like a moderate compared to some of the other just like absolute right wing freaks on some of these issues.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, there's so much about him where I reference on the show my crazy aunt who, like, she doesn't watch the news anymore. She's not involved in any of that. But what she does is she watches this woman every morning who at 7 o'clock says that she gets like prophecies from God. And, you know, and it's so, you have all of these people in that world creating all of these different conspiracies of how, you know, they've said that Joe Biden was deceased and Donald Trump is the commander in chief, even though Donald Trump or Biden's the president. Like, so it's people can throw all of this stuff and create Trump to be something that they want, even though he's not that at all.
Right.
It's
dangerous times.
It really is, you know, and we got 30 seconds here, so I'll diatribe here for a little bit. But like, one of my biggest frustrations is that I revere the office of the president, you know, and I revere what that office stands for and what it means to be representative at the federal level. And then you see like Carrie Lake getting a communications position and Kimberly Guilfoyle and RFK Jr. You got to, you know, and it's Matt freaking Gaetz as attorney general. There's zero sincerity to do well for the American people that he has. And it's just to cause chaos and own the libs. And it's, you know, when you have someone that believes in chemtrails, but doesn't believe in vaccines, and he's in charge of the Food and Drug Administration, that's insane. That is insane. Yeah.
The largest department in the federal government.
Right. Like, and you're like, gonna have that guy, it's wild to me. And so I don't know what's going to happen these next 4 years. And I'm not really particularly looking forward to that. But, you know, I don't know. But we're going to continue the discussion here. We're going to talk about Wisconsin and what is next in 2 years for this with whatever we got going on here. Dan Schaefer, we got on the Rational Revolution. We'll see you back in just a moment.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office for a second time, he'll travel to the Army-Navy football game today. On social media Friday, he said that Republicans will use their best efforts to eliminate daylight saving time. ABC's Stephen Portnoy explains why that's an issue.
Many believe the twice-yearly time change sparks negative health consequences. But opponents of year-round standard time note that first light in the summer in parts of the U.S. would happen before 4 a.m. Year-round daylight time would mean kids lining up for the bus in the dark all winter.
A new battleground of the national argument over abortion access. Texas sued a New York doctor for prescribing abortion pills to a woman near Dallas. Abortion is banned at all stages in Texas. Federal appeals court left the January 19th deadline in place requiring TikTok to be sold or banned in the U.S. And South Korea's parliament voted to impeach the president over his decision to impose martial law. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
A win for Badgers volleyball. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin women's volleyball team came back last night to eliminate Texas A&M 3-2 in the NCAA regionals. The Badgers will play Nebraska Sunday at 2 p.m. carried on ABC TV. The Cornhuskers beat the Badgers twice during a regular season. NBA, the Bucks and the Atlanta Hawks today in the NBA Cup semifinals as the tournament gets underway in Las Vegas. Baseball, the Brewers say it's a good deal. They traded away closer Devin Williams to the New York Yankees in exchange for two players, left-handed pitcher Nestor Cortez, infielder Caleb During, and for cash consideration. The 30-year-old Williams was with the Brewers for 6 years. NFL, Packers headed to Seattle to face the Seahawks tomorrow night. Defensive back Jair Alexander, still dealing with a knee injury, was not at practice yesterday.
Why wasn't he there?
Just based on what I saw over the last couple days, didn't feel like he was ready to play.
So will he be out then this week?
Yeah.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, chance of rain and snow and highs in the mid-30s. A bit breezy out of the southeast. Tonight, rain mixed with snow and temps around 34. For Sunday, cloudy and 42. Clouds and 42 again for Monday with a slight chance of rain. 33 on Tuesday.
Currently 26 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported recently on the impact of Shelby County versus Holder, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision invalidating Section 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Anticipating even more erosion of the VRA, some states have passed their own state VRAs. It's not only the dismantling of Section 5, the preclearance requirements for states with a history of discrimination. The conservative justices also made proving racial gerrymandering harder under Section 2, and they've made it easier for a state legislature to dilute minority voting power. And in the lower courts, more cases attempting to keep individual voters from bringing voting rights lawsuits under the VRA are pending. With dwindling protections from the federal government, California, Washington, Oregon, Virginia, New York, Connecticut, and Minnesota have enacted state VRAs. Michigan, Maryland, New Jersey, and Florida have efforts underway. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund recommends that state VRAs should have pre-clearance requirements for municipalities which have patterns of discrimination. Rules should include a prohibition against vote denial or dilution through gerrymandering, strong protections against intimidation or deception, language assistance, a statewide database to make evidence-based decisions on election administration, and a directive to the state judiciary to support pro-voter and pro-democracy decisions. We have the recommendations at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. We got one more segment here with our dear friend, Dan Schaefer. Civic Media's own now, you know? That's a pretty big deal.
That's right. Part of the team. Part of the network.
Hey, baby. That's right.
Right. And I always have, I got to give you a compliment here for your music selections on the show. I'm a big classic rock guy myself, and I always love the classic rock intros.
Those
that
are
you get on the Rational Revolution.
That is the man behind the glass. That is our producer, Todd the God. He's the guy that does that. I say I don't care what we play as long as we get it. So there's one song that we get in, and it's Bobby McGee, because that was Chris Alfheim's favorite song. And so she played that once ever, and so we still do that. So that's our tip of the cap to Senator-elect Chris Alfheim, former host. But so Wisconsin's got a lot going on. And I got to give you a tip of the cap, because you called this like weeks before it happened. So I don't know who the hell your sources are, but they're pretty good. you wrote a little op-ed. You called Ben Wickler the what candidate?
So one of the sources that I talked to when I was reporting this story on Ben Wickler potentially running for DNC chair, they called him the Goldilocks.
That's what it was, the Goldilocks candidate. That's right.
No, it was like, you know, he's just right in a lot of ways. So he's liked by both progressives and centrists in the party, by big dollar donors and grassroots organizers. So it's just trying to, I think the way that he was characterized by this source was just that he can be the type of person that can really unite the Democratic Party under the big tent that it is, you know, in many ways supposed to be.
Well, and you know, from my time on the Republican side, there's a lot of, you know, when the Republicans got their butts kicked by Obama the last time, but Wisconsin did really well. They tapped Reince Priebus, who was the Republican Party of Wisconsin chair, to run the RNC. And I think there's a lot of, you know, there's some secret sauce here in Wisconsin if we have someone really good, which sucks because Ben's really, really good.
Yeah.
I think that would be a loss for us. I mean, it would be great for Democrats all around Wisconsin or all around the United States, but like, whew.
It would certainly leave a vacuum in Wisconsin. There's no doubt. But you know, I think there is his term as state party chair ends this summer, I believe in June.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it was no guarantee that he was going to be running for another term for state party chair anyway. You know, some of the sources that I was talking to when I was reporting that story mentioned that Wickler is at some point interested in running for statewide office in Wisconsin.
Really?
So whether that would have been, you know, governor in 2 years, whether that would be senator in 2028. You know, Wickler has had some interest in potentially running for something. So maybe he wouldn't be the state party chair after his term ends anyway. So I think it is really interesting that he's jumped into this race. And it does seem like the DNC chair race is going to come down to two Midwesterners. So we're going to have this very Wisconsin versus Minnesota, you know, Midwest, nice, passive aggressive campaign between Ben Wickler, the party chair in Wisconsin, and Ken Martin, the party chair in Minnesota, who I think has been kind of planning to run for this. He's been part of the DNC. He's been planning to run for this for a while. And I think Wickler, you know, after, you know, kind of the being, again, the most successful losing state, you know, which I think is significant, and sending Tammy Baldwin back to the Senate,
it's huge,
and all of that. And I think, you know, Wickler, I do think he really understands how to build parties in a lot of ways. And I think recognizing the state party aspect of this too. You mentioned Reince Priebus, and you know, I talked to a Republican source when I was working on this story as well, who said that the last two more successful RNC chairs were also state party chairs before that. So yeah. Reince Priebus is one example, and then Mike Whatley, is it the current RNC chair? I'm bad with names, but he came from
they have,
the
like,
North
co-chairs
Carolina.
Or whatever the hell, because it's like.
Yeah, because you got to have somebody with the Trump's name as one of them. But like, he was the former state party chair in North Carolina before he became the RNC chair. So I think it does, you know, it is important to recognize that, you know, it's not just like the national fights and all of this. And it is really rebuilding the party and its infrastructure on a state level as well. And Wickler was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart earlier.
He gave a great interview
to really break a lot of that down. So I'd encourage people to check that out if you want to see what Wickler is saying right now as a part of that.
Yeah, as we're talking with Dan Schaefer here, Civic Media's political director, that is on my watch list to check out that interview because a couple of people texted me and he's getting a lot of play with, you know, so I think he's got a pretty decent shot. I didn't know that he was potentially looking to run for office in Wisconsin. He would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, but I think, you know, and this gets into, you know, kind of what you mentioned about what Governor Evers is going to do. There's kind of like a lot of political futures hinging on some of the decisions that are going to be made over the next 6 months here, you know, and what happens with Wickler's bid for DNC chair, whether Tony Evers chooses to run for a third term, and you know, what that might open up in races for, you know, who might be the next DNC chair or who might run for governor in 2 years. And so I think all of those conversations are in many ways connected.
Are you hearing anything from Evers or what he's going to do?
You know, I don't really know. I think right now he's got other priorities. Those of us in the political prognostication game might be interested in what he's going to do in a couple of years. But, you know, next year is the state budget year. He's doing some listening sessions. He was just in Milwaukee a couple of days ago for that. And I think, you know, that will be certainly the priority. I think it's going to be really important at the state level to see what happens once Trump is inaugurated, once he takes office on things like the promises of mass deportation or implementing tariffs or all of these different things. Like, I think that's going to be really important for kind of blue states, purple states who have, you know, Democratic governors to push back on this in a lot of ways. So I imagine that is certainly more of a priority for what the governor is dealing with right now. But I think it's going to be important to, you know, his decision is a big one. And like running for a third term,
he's 72. You know,
he's 70. Well, he'll be 75 in 2026. We actually have the same birthday.
He's 75, really?
So he'll be 75 in 2026 in November. And so it'll be, you know, and I think that's a huge factor, but people are going to be tempted to make the Joe Biden comparisons,
right.
But I think it's kind of an unfair one because Joe Biden was really unpopular.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to run, a really unpopular, 80 something year old president versus a very popular, and Charles Franklin always notes this in the, Marquette University Law School poll. Tony Evers is probably the most popular politician in the state of Wisconsin.
Really?
And so if 2026 comes around, if it does look like a more favorable year for Democrats, is that something that indicates that Tony Evers should run again? Or does that mean that you kind of open the door for a lot of these other folks who might be interested in a statewide run? And I think there are many. I think that the Democratic bench now is in much better shape than it was in a number of years ago. So some of the names that I had in my report there, you know, he's made it really no secret that he's interested in running for something. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, someone I'm a huge fan of, being from Milwaukee. I endorsed his bid for county executive back when he ran in 2020. So I think he would be a really interesting candidate. Attorney General Josh Call has made some noise about running. You've got Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, State Senator Kelda Royce had run for governor before. You wonder if she might be interested.
Mandela Barnes is still kicking around.
Mandela Barnes is still working in and around the state. So you've got a lot of people who might be interested in this. And I think some of those names, you know, if Evers does decide to run again, some of those names might be people who would run for state party chair. If Wickler gets the job to run the national party as well. So I think, you know, all of those folks on the who kind of higher up names on the Democratic bench would be really interesting to watch to see what they would do. I don't know. Are any other names come to mind for you for who might be in the mix there?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you kind of look at, you know, who ran for what, and, you know, what I think that Tom Nelson is kind of, he's settled down. He knows that's where he's at. And, you know, I don't know if Justin Nichols in Manitowoc would do something because he's very well liked. And, you know, I heard he was kicking around something, but I don't know. You know, I think it really depends on what happens. If it's a good year for Democrats, I would almost want Tony Evers to stay the course, because if he is the most popular, you know, Democrat in Wisconsin, we need that rising tide to lift all of the ships from, you know, Assembly to Senate to Congress. And especially if there's no Trump at the top of the ticket, you need someone who is incredibly strong to bring everybody else up. And that is Tony Evers.
And I think that brings an opportunity too, because we've, you know, for those of us who pay a lot of attention to the state legislature, you know, 2026 was always going to be the year that was most likely to flip both chambers.
Yep.
And so do you want, you know, does Tony Evers want a chance to govern with a majority?
Do something,
you know,
right.
A potential Democratic trifecta there. Would that give them a better chance? But again, it's just, for me, it doesn't come back to popularity or, you know, how well liked he is. It's not a Joe Biden comparison, but it's still an age factor. You know, he's still 75 is 75.
Right.
So, you know, I think a third term is a more difficult one to run for, too. I think we saw that with Tammy Baldwin this year. You know, it's more difficult to ask voters to send you back a third time than it is, you know, just for a simple reelection and whatever it might be, too. So I think that's a factor to consider.
Do you hear on the right who's I hear Rebecca Clayfish is lurking and wondering what she wants to do, and you know, but who, anybody else that you hear?
Yeah, Tom Tiffany's name has kind of been around, right. and I you know, I don't really see him as a really particularly successful statewide candidate. No. He's certainly, you know, kind of getting his name out there a bit more.
Yeah,
like he's on the Fox Newses and whatever else. And, you know, he's been very vocal about, especially like wanting mass deportation and very vocal on the immigration issue. You know, so that's one, I'll go back to the congressman who I think did especially well. If Brian Stile runs, I think that's a pretty formidable candidate. You know, whether he wants to do that, and he seems to be rising up in the ranks in the House. Maybe that's the place for him to stay and potentially, you know, maybe run for Senate in 2028 if Ron Johnson doesn't run again, if he wants to stay at the federal level. But I think, you know, just based on some electoral performance, like of Wisconsin's Republican congressman, of those six Wisconsin Republican congressman, Style probably has the best prospects for a statewide run, I would think.
Yeah, and the good thing about Ron Johnson is he supports term limits and he's only going to run twice. So that's cool.
Right.
Yeah, right. So that's, good on him. And now, you know, not 2 years down the road, we got a couple months down the road. We've got a state Supreme Court race. And I mean, when I saw Brad Schimmel's name, I was like, ooh, he's a formidable candidate.
He's a better candidate than Daniel Kelly.
Yes.
Which, not exactly the highest of bars to clear there.
That's true.
But, you know, considering Daniel Kelly lost two state Supreme Court seats, both by double digits, you know, Brad Schimmel has won a statewide race in Wisconsin.
Multiple times.
He's got that going for him. What, wasn't it just the once though?
I thought he was in there twice. Maybe it might not be, but yeah, with Jimmy Van Hollen. I don't know. Was it once?
I think it was just the once. Okay. He was elected 2014, and then he lost to Josh Call in 2018.
Okay.
But yeah, he's a better candidate than Kelly, and I think, you know, he's run a statewide race before. He knows what he's doing in that regard. But I think a lot of the views that he's espoused on a number of, I think, issues that have been really critical to state Supreme Court races, namely abortion rights, you know, his views on that are maybe not really matching a 2024 electorate,
right,
maybe the way that they would have in 2014. So I think, you know, that is certainly going to be a thing that Democrats and liberals and those who are running against him, those who are supporting Judge Susan Crawford, will focus in on.
Well, Dan Schaefer, thank you so much. Our time is up. I appreciate that. We got to keep doing this. We got to make this a regular thing because, man, you are filled with a lot of brilliance. So I appreciate your time, and we'll catch you down the road.
I don't know if it's brilliance, maybe just a lot of hot air, but I appreciate the conversation.
Well, speaking of hot air, I've got a hot take next, so stick around, and we'll see you on the other side.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turn public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, revolutionaries, one and all. That was Dan Schaefer. He's brilliant. Man, I have to say, I followed Dan for a while. And I'm not like being a shill for the company that I that I'm here, but the investment to bring someone like that in house, you know, was really impressive. He is a brilliant person, and he covers the news and covers the issues so well, and we are very lucky that he is a part of our roster. So I really hope to use that connection quite a bit, because he can bring a lot of insight and entertainment to your listening ears. So I want to talk about something, and we're going to shift gears a little bit to an issue and something that happened over the last week. And it was a pretty disturbing thing. And it was, that's the murder of Brian Thompson, who's the CEO of United Healthcare. And some of the fallout from that, you know, I talk a lot about the room that we're in, and why I give the reasons to people that are Trump supporters. I say, why aren't you here? Well, I say that if I was in a room full of Trump supporters, I would look to my right and I would see white nationalists, and I would see, you know, people that like, you know, racist, you know, and then I would look to my left and I would see people that that are banning books, that are telling people who love one another that they shouldn't be able to get married. I would see people that are telling women what they should and shouldn't do with their bodies. And does that represent everybody in that room? No, but the fact that they're in that same room, that means that I would be in the wrong room. You know, and that's kind of how I break it down. And a man was murdered in cold blood on a New York City sidewalk. And some people in the room that I'm in are celebrating like the guy that shot him is Robin Hood. And I'm so disappointed, and I'm kind of angry at that. And here's the thing. This guy was 50 years old. He had two kids, school-age kids. He was a husband, and he was murdered. And I wish that the people that are saying this, you know, that says that he's a hero and he's a, you know, I hope you saw the video of what happened, you know, because it's horrible. You know, you can see on the CCTV video of the him walking into the picture. On the bottom left-hand corner, the gunman raises his gun, and you can see Brian Thompson stumble. And obviously knocks him off his feet. And then he goes forward a couple more steps and falls as he's being shot multiple times. And then the assailant walks up to him as he's laying there dying and fires the shot that ends his life, and then just callously walks away. Like, it's horrific. It's horrific. And what frustrates me so much is a month ago, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, everybody in the room that we're in was talking about we're not going back. We're going to fight for equality and you know, love, and we're going to fight for justice and truth and all of these things. And then fast forward a month and a half, and we're celebrating this guy being murdered on a sidewalk? Like, no. Now, the rage is justified over the industry. You know, the healthcare in this country is horrible. And you look at United Healthcare, you know, Aetna and all, whatever, Blue Cross Blue Shield. It sucks. It sucks. These companies are picking who lives and who dies. These companies are picking who goes bankrupt and who does not. These companies are picking whose life is fulfilled and whose life struggles. It's not fair. It's not fair. That is completely accurate. To be pissed off, to have rage, to be angry, because the United States is the only darn country in the world that can't figure this stuff out. That can't say, hey, if you have cancer, maybe you shouldn't bankrupt your future generations just to live. I get it. I get it. I get it. I have a pre-existing condition. I have asthma. I have to take an inhaler every day. My mom has diabetes. My dad has diabetes. They are on medications. And the insurance, you know, covers it, I'm sure, begrudgingly. But the fact that people online are celebrating this guy who took it upon himself to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner of someone whose name you had no idea who he was 3 weeks ago, and now you're celebrating. No, this guy is not Robin Hood. This guy is Ted Kaczynski. He's the Unabomber. He killed someone in cold freaking blood. And this guy deserves to never breathe one more breath as a free man in his entire life. He murdered someone. And it's so upsetting to see people on my Facebook feed or on Twitter or people that I know and that have had conversations about, hey, we're not fighting about what's left versus right. We're fighting about what's right versus wrong. Guys, murder, it's wrong. And if you can't understand that, if you can't get past that, get the hell out of the room. Because you don't belong there. The rage over the industry, 1,000%, yes. I get it. I understand it. I live it. Because the industry sucks. The idea sucks. It's awful. Let's work to change that. And you don't change it by slaughtering someone in the streets, because what I fear is that now that happened. What is next? We're not playing V for Vendetta, guys. That's not how you fix this. That's not how you fix this. We have to do better. We have to do better. That's my message this week. I love you guys. Hang in there. And we'll see you next week on the Rational Revolution.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WISS weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversations in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WISS.FM today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversations. Get signed up today at WISS.FM/newsletter. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Thank you for listening to WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A new lawsuit opens a new front in the battle over abortion, says ABC's Richard Cantu.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing New York doctor Margaret Daly Carpenter for prescribing the so-called abortion pill to a woman near Dallas in violation of Texas law. Such prescriptions are a key reason that the number of abortions has increased in the U.S. even since state bans started taking effect.
Top Republican in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said that efforts to undermine public confidence in proven cures are not just uninformed, they're dangerous. He was discussing the benefits of the polio vaccine, and his statement came out amid public health concerns over the influence of a lawyer close to Health Secretary nominee Robert Kennedy, who has asked the FDA to yank its approval of the current polio vaccine. Today, President-elect Trump will attend the Army-Navy football game, and South Korea's parliament voted to impeach President Yoon Suk-yeol over his decision to impose martial law. His powers and duties are suspended. This is ABC News.